Today we begin a new series of conversations that are all about moving from wishing to having. One of the reasons why it is a relevant topic, this idea of moving from wishing to having, is that there is almost an entire cottage industry built culturally around the idea of wishing for something good. The thing is that this cottage industry basically is built upon the idea that it probably isn't going to happen, but it does really sell to talk about wishing on a star or wishing that this would happen or wishing that that would happen. Now, many years ago, Frank came across a book called Wishcraft, which was basically taking this idea and turning it in the direction that we suggest that you go with this idea. And that is that once you identify the fact that you are dreaming about something, you can, if you wish, take steps to go in the direction of having that which you're dreaming of. So we talk about this in this particular way. Each of you have heard this. We're going to repeat it again and again and again because it does bear repeating. You're sitting in the middle of an amazing storm of contrast. And we say that in a very delightful way, not a frightening way, not an overwhelming way. You're literally in the middle of contrast. You can see color, you can see texture. You can see the contrast of the difference between how far something is versus how close it is. So you can see things like shadow and depth. You can reach out your fingers and you can touch surfaces and you can feel something that's smooth, something that's slightly rough, something that's pebbly, something that's sticky. You can hear sounds. Obviously, you're hearing the sound of Frank's voice, so you can hear sound. You can take a deep breath through your nose, and you can smell whatever smells are in the environment. And if you want, you can take out your tongue and reach out and lick something and taste what it tastes like. We don't recommend you just do that with anything, but you do have that capacity. There's likely things in your larder or in your refrigerator that are just full of tasty deliciousness. And when you put things in your mouth, they're going to be sweet or sour. Some of them may be salty, they might be crunchy, they might be smooth. There's all sorts of contrast. You're in a massive ocean, roiling ocean of contrast. You don't realize how roiling it is until you begin to pay attention to that. But all of this physicality that you can see, hear, taste, touch, and smell has arisen out of your desire. And it is further amplifying the desire because as you are here and you are doing what you're doing and having what you are having, what is going on in this very place at this very time in this very way is some great magic. And the magic here is not something that has to be sought out. It is not something that has to be looked for. You're literally sitting in the middle of it. All those things we just described, the colors, the sounds, the textures, the tastes, the aromas, these things are all here and they're quite literally bombarding your physical senses with data, which is great. You ignore a great deal of this data and you very much specifically put your attention on certain pieces and parts. Other things fade into the background. They're still there because the foreground is amplified by having a background by which to distinguish itself. So, if you're in a room and there's a window, you're probably going to pay attention more to the drapery or the blinds or the wall or the picture on the wall than you are to the background of the trees and the woods, the parking lot, the cars, whatever it is that is on the other side of that window. Mainly because the stuff that is closer is what you generally tend to pay attention to, although perhaps you don't. Perhaps you pay more attention to what is in the background than you do in the foreground. it's all a matter of preference, and the preference has been developed over time based upon your interactions with your environment, which you have called forth and which has arisen at your command on your behalf and to your benefit. The problem with wishing is that you're hoping something will happen that is different than what you have. So contrast has brought forth desire, and contrast is something different. Remember, contrast does not necessarily mean the stuff that's not good. In fact, the majority of the contrast you experience is stuff that you really like. For example, if you were to see a rainbow, our favorite example of the idea of contrast, and you were to sit and look at it, there's all sorts of things that you would notice. One thing is that it's a little bit difficult to look at a rainbow because you're looking at light and the light that has been filtered through spectrum. And in that spectrum of light, it breaks into pieces and parts that appear to be color to your eyes. So you go from a red through an orange into a yellow and a green and a blue and an indigo and a violet. And each one of these colors has its own variety of color within its band. So the red band is all sorts of different kinds of red. And the orange band is all sorts of different kinds of orange. If you look really closely at it, you're going to see all sorts of things in that spectrum of the color of the rainbow that's projected across the sky. And all it really is just light being filtered through water. It's amazing. We shouldn't say all that it is, because it really is amazing. It's quite astonishing. It's quite delicious indeed. The problem with rainbows, however, is that they're like wishes. Yes, you can see them, but you can't touch them. You can't eat them. You can't taste them. You can't even find their rainbow's end. Because as you move, you're position in relationship to the light changes. And when you get to the bottom of the rainbow, you'll find that there's nothing there. That's what a wish is like. It doesn't yield anything because it's an abstract concept. So the wish is happening in your imagining. That's what we're talking about. You're imagining something and you have an affinity for it. Because there's lots of things that you imagine that you don't like. And here we're talking about the things that you're imagining that you do like. But a lot of the dilemma here, the reason why it stays a wish and doesn't move any further, is because you may have defined yourself as being someone who cannot have that which you are wishing for. So we referred to that cottage industry that's all about wishes. So one day my prince will come is a very good example of that wish. One day I'll win the lottery is another really good example of that wish. One day anything is a wish. It's out away from where you're sitting. The other quality of a wish is that it seems magical, but it isn't magical. It seems very hallowed, but there's nothing really shiny about it. A rainbow is a wonderful thing to sit and observe from a distance. But you know that it's transitory and it's temporary. It's a very particular confluence of water and sunlight. So you can't see a rainbow, for example, at night. You have to have sunlight. And moons do not cast rainbows at all. You may occasionally see something kind of like a rainbow when you look directly at the moon. Sometimes the moon does seem to have a halo, which is, we suppose, the closest thing you could come to a moon rainbow. But all these things are transitory, and they have to do with the positioning of the atmosphere, which contains water and air, between you and the object you're looking at. And the sun has to be behind you in order for you to see the rainbow. You have to look at the moon. In other words, it's all very conditional. All of it is very conditional. And that's one of the elements of a wish. If I were to get to this place, then I would be rich because I won the lottery. If I were to get to this place, even the construction in the English language tells you you've got a whole lot of conditionality going on. If I were, the conditional subjunctive, if I were to meet my prince, if my prince were to come, then, and we've always said, when you have if-then constructs in your ideas, they're not real. You have pushed them out, far away from you. It's likely self-protective. And that's something we'll likely be talking about, depending on how the contrast from this conversation arises. But it's self-protective because you don't want to be disappointed. Another way we could have phrased the name of this particular series is the problem with trying to never be disappointed. Because that is what this is about. Wishing is a safe place. Seemingly, it appears to be. You don't get a lot of contrast out of wishing, other than perhaps a slow, steady drip of regret. So in that cottage industry, another one of the things that is sold is the idea that you need to do things before you die because you'll regret them. And we always want to say, well, yes, for a few moments on your deathbed, you may regret these things. But once you get sucked into where you're going, once the vortex of energy that pulls you into the place where you're going on to, which is just a more expansive idea of you, regret falls by the wayside along with all the other things that don't feel better. And you won't remember it. You won't remember that you regretted. And it seems like a lousy thing to plan for what's going to happen when you're dying, instead of bringing yourself into the present moment and noticing where it is that you want to go from here. We understand why you could leverage off of that idea of, I don't want to be dying, and then be concerned about this. But it doesn't seem to us to be a very useful way to look at things. It does fall again into the realm of wishing. When I am dying, I do not want to, still very conditional. The reason why we think this is a cottage industry, the reason why we think so many people can make so much money off of the idea of wishing, and under wishing we put other things like aspiring, attempting to achieve, things like that. But the reason why we think this is such a productive industry is because lots and lots of people don't want to be disappointed. So the easiest way to not be disappointed is to never really truly take an idea and bring it into a space that is real. Or that's the idea. Of course, not wanting to be disappointed means that you're lining up a whole bunch of disappointment. Whenever you're opposing something, obviously, whenever you're pushing against something, you're just simply going to have more of it. Plain and simple. So when we talk about having, what we're talking about is you're sitting in something and you're experiencing it directly. It's in your hot little hands, or you can observe it in physical terms. But the basis of having is not the physicality, it's the feeling of it. And when you have something, you know what it feels like to have it. Now, if it's something that's new and something that you have a lot of desire around, that feeling of having may appear to be temporarily pretty intense. And we notice that some of our physical friends who've been playing around with these ideas for quite some time may temporarily believe that getting that intensity is the key, but it isn't. We would say, actually, the much more useful thing is to see the regularity or the normality or the usualness of that which you desire. But we'll get to that. We're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. What we're saying here, essentially, here in this first conversation is, this is what wishing is. Wishing is hoping. Wishing is looking forward to something conditionally. If I were to, then I would. If I were to get this, then I would feel this way. Or then this is what my life would be like. The essence, the heart of this conversation is about crossing the bridge from imagining, wishing, into intending, which leads to having. And when you're intending something, what you're literally doing is saying, I can have it, through the feeling of what it feels like to be in possession of the experience or the thing that it is that you desire to have, and seeing it in your own way. Not everybody is visual, we know that. But having it in the way that is specific to you through the power of your intending. But as you'll notice, it is like walking across a bridge. It does seem to take a little bit of effort. It does take a little bit of will to bridge between the imagining, the wishing, and the intending that leads to the having, that opens the way into the having. Now, the interesting thing is nobody that we've ever come across has ever said, I really wish that I had these things that are normal to me, that are usual to me. The wishing is always about something exceptional. That's why it's a very powerful thing that when you're intending into the having of something, to see it not being exceptional, but to rather see it as being normal. You're evolving, in other words, what you're commanding your physical reality to do is to evolve into a state of expression, which is what physical reality is. It's the expression of an idea, of a whole cluster of ideas. And you want it to expand into a state wherein this thing that seems to be more than what you've had before, it's more something. Either more different or more of the same, but it's more something, now is spacious enough to hold it. So this is where we begin with this series of conversations today. We look very much forward to the questions you may have and the contrast that your questions will bring to the table, which will further amplify these ideas in wonderful and delicious ways that we can't even begin to imagine. We have no idea what they will be, but what we know with a certitude, with no question whatsoever and a complete lack of ambiguity, is that as good as this possibly is now, it will only be evolving into something better and better and better from here.